A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
An Erio's original.
With anti-Asian hate crimes at record numbers, this season of The Margaret Cho, we're examining the historical crimes that laid the groundwork for this recent onslaught of violence. I talk with Asian comedians, authors, journalists, podcasters, as well as the organizations and people working to stop Asian hate.
Welcome to The Margaret Cho, Mortal Minority. Today, we're talking about the recent beating and robbing of an 80-year-old Asian man in San Leandro. Also, our historic event is the Denver Chinatown Riot. My guest today is Phil Yu, creator of the blog Angry Asian Man, and an old-timey friend of mine. Thanks, Phil.
My pleasure.
How are you feeling this AAPI month with everything going on?
It's a little bit... Heritage Month is always weird in that, I mean, for me, Heritage Month is every month, right? I mean, it's where, you know, this is just the sort of government approved month where everyone else has to care, I guess. And so it's funny that it comes now on amidst all this other hyper visibility, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels, and when you spend like a long time just trying to get people to listen to you and see you, like feeling invisible for a long time and then suddenly feeling super hyper visible, it's too fast. It's too much, you know? So feeling a little bit like anxious and kind of tired, actually, you know?
Well, it's exhausting. Also, it's kind of like, are you only going to care for this month?
Mm-hmm.
And is this the only time we're going to discuss this? Because we're going to have to keep talking about it. All year.
Right, right. I mean,
Because it's not...
Because we're thinking like... Because if history shows, and it has, I mean, we all know all this stuff has been happening for a very long time. It's just right now we've kind of reached a threshold where we're like, shit, like people better... I mean, like, if you can't hear us now, then you're never going to hear us. So it does, but the pattern is always just like, well, we're going to just go back into kind of this weird state of just kind of tolerating the kind of shit that gets flung at us, you know?
Yeah, but there is no... I think there's, like, no way to tolerate it anymore. There's no way of, like, going back to where we were. And that, you know, but it is a kind of outrage fatigue where it's every day when I always look at, like, Sifan on Instagram or Dion Lim TV. On Instagram, and Jackfruit and Ricefeed, and then it's like a continual, like, all of this onslaught of violence that, and it takes a sort of the same story kind of, but it takes different instances, different video every day. It's
right.
I don't know if there's like an end to it. There's like, it's endless, and it's multiple times a day, actually.
Right. No, I mean, it's so much that I can't keep track of, like, the latest hate crime. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I'll see a headline. I'm like, is this the one I already saw? Was this the... You know what I mean? And you see another grainy video, and you're like, this is different. This is different from the other elderly man that got assaulted, like, you know, last week or yesterday, you know?
It's different, but it's also... Like, I feel like stuff like this has always happened, yet we hadn't had either people on the news... really focus on it. We haven't had social media focus on it. We haven't always had the technology to capture the video for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's part of it. So I feel like these incidents, and also like another part of it is elderly Asian Americans coming forward.
Right, right, right. I mean, no, of course, like in the past, I think it's very common for people to just swallow it, take it and swallow. Like, you know, you just kind of develop a thicker skin just by virtue of being Asian in America, you know, and I think it's come to the point where, yeah, like, even the elders can't stay silent anymore, you know what I mean? But that's not to say, you know, one of the sort of narratives that I always hear is that, like, oh, Asians are finally speaking out. And I'm like, that's a little annoying to me.
That's not true at all.
That ahistorical view is very, that it actually, you know, contributes to this idea that Asians are silent and passive. It's like, no. We have a history also of resistance and speaking out and, you know, and right, not taking shit. So, like, you know, I definitely have to push back on anybody who ever says, like, oh, well, finally, Asians are speaking out, you know. That's not true.
I don't think that that's true. I think what it is that we're more of a unified community in speaking out. Mm. That there have been long-held separations between us as Asian Americans, because we're not a monolith,
yeah,
but we are also very diverse within our ranks. And so I think there's definitely more of a unified voice, mm-hmm, that is emerging. But it's not that we're finally speaking out.
I mean, also, again, it's just like the level of violence right now is just, you cannot turn away. I'm just like you just cannot ignore this anymore, you know? So, you know, the onslaught. It's the onslaught.
The onslaught. Okay, let's talk about this is the modern story, and this is one of the ones. This made me so angry. Mm-hmm. And it was because of the video, but it was a San Leandro, which is in the Bay Area, San Francisco. It was the beating of an 80-year-old man. One of the people who assaulted him was an 11-year-old boy. So this is from the CBS local news. An elderly Asian American man was assaulted and robbed over the weekend in a brazen attack in his San Leandro neighborhood that was recorded on surveillance video. The police said the assault took place around 4 p.m. Saturday. The 80-year-old was out for a walk in San Leandro when two males approached and attacked him. A young male appears to be in the video to be associated with the two, but he's not seen participating in the attack. Investigators said the suspect pushed the victim and demanded his wallet. And when the victim screamed for help, the suspects removed the victim's Fitbit, which is like, what kind of value does a Fitbit? I mean, why? Oh, I'm so mad.
Personal fitness tracker. He wanted to see how many steps that guy had taken that day. Yeah.
Okay, then they fled in a blue Subaru sedan. In March, the San Leandro Police Department conducted a victim demographic study where violent crime statistics were compared from 2019 to 2020, and they discovered an increase of 283% against our Asian community members. Although, at this present moment, there's no indication that the elderly victim was targeted due to his race. I disagree. Yeah. I disagree. The 11-year-old boy and a 17-year-old were arrested in connection with an attack and a robbery. I mean, the 11-year-old had also been behind a wheel of a carjacking. But when you watch the video, you hear, like, the laughing. That's what really upset me. Uh-huh. Is that it's somehow, like, this funny thing that they're attacking this older Asian man. And I don't know why that every time there's an incident like this, they go to, well, we don't know if it's racially motivated.
Right. Well, it's so, I guess, in the eyes of the law, it is so hard to prove that something is a hate crime. You and I both know it, right? When we see something like this, it's like, we know it. It's just like someone has to be saying a fucking racial slur as they're beating someone for it to be a hate crime, right? Like it has to be so explicit, you know. But that's the thing. That's sort of the labor of being victims to hate crimes, and what's going on right now. It's like we expend so much energy trying to fucking prove that like This is racist. This is racially, you know what I mean? Like, you can talk in circles with people about whether or not, was this really a hate crime? Was this a robbery? Like, I don't know. Right now, what's in the air? What's in the atmosphere? Like, you can't say any of this is random. Like, for me, I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm going to look at it as a hate crime until proven otherwise, you know?
Right. Why are we saddled with the burden of proof? Like, we're on trial here over the person who did these attacks. And I mean, it's the strangest thing. Like, even with the Atlanta shooting happening, they're like, we don't know if this is a hate crime. Well, it's a hate crime. You know, why is there a question? It's again, questioning whether we're a minority, again, questioning whether we're even a race.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, that's the other thing is, like, if it's a racial problem, why is it only about white people and black people always? We never added to the racial conversation.
It's why I actually really love this podcast, Margaret. I mean, because you're delving into the past, you're able to see a sustained history. It's not just a one-off incident mm-hmm. each time, right? Like, we're seeing a pattern. We're seeing that, like, this kind of racism against Asians is baked into the American story. It's not just, like, these incidents that, like, kind of pop up. It's, like, this is part of the entire fabric, you know? And to reduce this kind of thing to black and white is just completely ignoring an entire swath of history, you know?
Yeah, and the invisibility is also a big part of it, too, that it's continually cropped out of the image from the moment when the railroad is completed and they did not have any of the Chinese workers in the photograph is the moment we were cropped out of the rebuilding of America after the Civil War. Right. And those moments are so important. If you look at history, like, when you crop us out of that photo, you crop us out of history, then we become invisible for the rest of history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw recently, this is related, but recently there's like this poll of Americans asking them to name a famous Asian American. Just name an Asian, right? Mm-hmm. And 43% said, don't know. 9%, like 11% said Bruce Lee, and 9% said Jackie Chan. And that's the top, those are the top three answers, you know? And it's like, I mean, never mind what they said. I mean, I feel like that actually is the story of my life, actually, being invisible or being taunted as Bruce Lee or Jackie Chan. Like, that's it. But, like, never mind what they said. It actually speaks to sort of the invisibility and not really seeing Asians as, like, viable as people. You know what I mean? Like, we're just, you know. Right. And so when you're erased from having any kind of agency or place in our society, that's what, and that goes also with our history, right? Then you're just mm-hmm. there. You've not been part of who we are and this working society. You're just there, you know. And so you can just say, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know any Asians.
Right, and that it's fine. You know that it's fine. That also the removal of the shame around racism against Asians, that to me is upsetting as well. Like, normally kids like this would be ashamed if somebody called them out to being racist against anybody else. But with Asians, it's fine. Right.
Like that kind of...
That's a weird...
It's normalized, you know? Yeah. That's the thing. It's like normalizing sort of racism against Asians. Even if it's reduced to that, like... I'm telling you, like when Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee are wielded as like taunts, you know what I mean? Like then there is something there, you know? That like, oh, we can use the only famous Asians we know as weapons against you. Like, that's a level of disrespect, you know?
It's really weird. It's really weird. And it's really, but yeah, there's like, we've got to turn up the volume on shame against racism against Asians. Because there's like it's not heard.
Right. Right.
It's really, it's such a weird thing. Okay. We're going to take a short break. And then we're going to talk about the Denver Chinatown riot.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're back. I only was able to find one real source. Well, two sources. The level of like research that I have to do for some of these stories is pretty crazy. Where you're like, it's like a PDF off of a Wikipedia. Like it's somebody's paper. It's not in any kind of like real sort of like awareness of history, but there were so many riots like this, mm-hmm. and there were probably about 200 Chinatowns from 1849 until about 1890, and most of them were completely decimated. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the stories of this is the Denver one. So the background is Mark R. Ellis wrote for the University of Nebraska's Encyclopedia of the Great Plains.
A renowned source.
Yeah. Our source. Denver's riot was one of the 153 anti-Chinese riots that swept through the American West through the 1870s and 1880s. And this is like the same story. It really repeats itself, you know, in Rock Springs, Wyoming, mm-hmm. in Hell's Canyon, in Oregon, in Los Angeles, where you're seeing these anti-Chinese riots, mostly from other immigrants from Germany, Ireland, Italy. You know, it's like almost as if these people were trying to figure out who was going to be the dominant workers there.
I feel like this is the moment where like Irish and German and Italians, people who were looked on very low, you know, as Europeans, like on sort of the totem pole, this is the moment where they became white people because they found someone yes. lower than them on the labor ladder that they could shit on. You know what I mean?
But it's also weird to think about Irish and Germans not thinking they're white.
Yeah, right.
That's another weird part of it. Like, that's where whiteness comes from, think. But it's
so
really...
It's crazy that it happens in relation to, well, we're not Asian, so we got to be white. You know what I mean? Like, we're not these people.
Yeah. That's so weird. So this is going back to the Encyclopedia of the Great Plains. The Chinese experienced discrimination and violence since 1849 when they first arrived in California. They were driven out of the California mines by the foreign miners tax and also experienced outright violence. And so that's kind of one of the reasons why Chinese laundries emerged, because it's not like the Chinese people were very good at doing laundry. It's just that that was the one job
sure?
that was, well, I'm okay yeah. at it. Oh, did you know I'm Chinese? I told you I'm Chinese, right?
I heard that. Is that real?
I'm 100% Chinese. My parents are from Korea, but we were Japanese briefly when there was Japanese occupation of Korea. And then we were Chinese before that. So we became mysteriously Korean at some point.
What? Without...
Isn't that weird?
Without derailing a conversation too much, like, how did you find this out?
Through a DNA test about 10
okay.
years ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, okay. And they did a whole DNA thing, and then they were like, well, you're 100% Chinese.
Oh, my God.
But my grandparents were always more comfortable speaking Japanese and reading uh-huh. Japanese. All their books uh-huh. were in Japanese. And then, but my parents are very solidly Korean.
Yeah.
So they're not having it, but so I'm Chinese.
Wow, that's yeah. that's got to do a number on, I don't know.
It's yeah. definitely, it's interesting. Yeah. But okay. So I really embrace it, but we're not that good at laundry, naturally. What happened was they were just forced out of mining, so they had to figure out jobs. So one of the jobs was to clean the clothes of the miners who were sending their dirty clothes by mail to the then Sandwich Islands, which we now know as Hawaii. And they wouldn't get them back for months and months and months. So that's an interesting fact about the Chinese. So By the 1870s, the anti-Chinese movement had entered politics, and fearful that cheap Chinese labor would threaten the white working class, Dennis Kearney, an Irish immigrant and founder of the Working Man's Party, led a campaign to ban Chinese immigration. During the presidential election of 1880, Chinese immigration became an important issue when Winfield Hancock, the Democratic candidate, supported a ban on Chinese immigration. So this is like the atmosphere. They called us the pests of the Pacific. They pointed out that if they invaded Colorado in greater numbers, white men would starve and women would be forced into prostitution, which, you know, again, it's like they're going to take our women. It's the same narrative as like with black Americans. They were like, they're going to take our women. And this fear around that.
And the fear of, you know, the fear of Mexican immigrants taking our jobs. It's kind of the
right
same thing over and over again. Right. Yeah.
Right. So on October 28th in 1880, the Rocky Mountain News reported that there was open talk in Denver of running the Chinese out. The night before the riot, supporters of the Democratic Party marched through the streets, many carrying anti-Chinese banners. Democrats, man, you come a long way.
I think back then, none of that shit means anything. Democrats,
it was different. It was way different. So this is this is about the riot itself. On Sunday afternoon at John's Place, which is an excerpt from The Road to Chinese Exclusion, The Denver Riot, 1880 Election and Rise of the West, The Rise of the West by Li Ping Zhu. On Sunday, October 31st at about 2 p.m., business as usual at John Amundsen's Saloon, known as John's Place in Denver. There were three customers, George E. Shell, and two Chinese men quietly playing pool when three or four inebriated white men came in. On seeing the Chinese, the stranger approached the table and disrupted the game by moving some of the balls. What? Are you don't be moving the balls.
Disrespectful. That is disrespect.
So disrespectful. When one of the Chinese men asked them not to interfere with the game, the uninvited rabble-rousers blurted out expletives and made threatening gestures. John Amundsen, the pub owner, quickly stepped in to thwart the harassing, and they responded by saying he was as good as a damn Chinaman and demanded the same service. So Amundsen served them beer and calmly advised the Chinese to leave. The Chinese left, but a few minutes later, two of the hostile intruders took the same exit and followed them. Notice one of the Chinese men was there, and one of the thugs charged him and began punching without provocation. There was a Chinese laundry in the alley, and several of the workers were washing clothes. And seeing the more Chinese there, the white gang angrily began to assail the unsuspecting men, totally unrelated, and smash up the place. Acting in self-defense, one of the laundrymen instinctively grabbed a case knife from the table, which was like a box cutter. It wasn't sharp or anything. It was used for scraping paraffin from the iron that they would do to iron clothes. But the weapon made a serious cut on the attacker who began to bleed profusely. Meanwhile, a host of Chinese men who overheard the commotion rushed out of nearby buildings to assist their countrymen. One Chinese man fired a pistol in the air as a warning, and another blew a police whistle in a call for help. And Hong Li began shouting at the attackers, but missed all of them. But hearing the wails of the bloodied man who had gotten hit by the knife, rambunctious crowd spilled onto the streets, and they were shocked at the sight of this bleeding man and became increasingly hostile until more people filled in the streets, and a riot broke out. So then a riot broke out. They're looking for Hong Li, who I guess they're sort of blaming for everybody. I guess he was the one who had a gun and fired the pistol in the air. And the policeman finally arrested him. And everybody's just drunk, and they just started breaking up the town. The frightened Chinese, most of whom didn't know what happened, just barricaded their places. They're like looking for somebody who didn't really do anything, but they're going to insist on lynching Hong Li. The city of Denver, with a population of nearly 40,000, had an inadequate police force of only 20 officers And on that day, only 8 men were on duty. The firefighters attempted to quell the rioters by spraying them down with horses. Spraying them down with hoses. They're chanting. The rioters are chanting. The Chinese must go. While they're chanting, they're attacking Chinese homes and businesses. Before nightfall, the attackers had demolished every Chinese property on Blake Street. Meanwhile, the rioters encountered unexpected resistance from a group of renowned citizens. The city's white prostitutes, Madame Lizzie Preston, rushed 10 of her working girls out of Preston House to rescue 4 Chinese from further home, armed with...
What?
I know, it's kind of...
Okay, all right.
Annie Oakley? I don't know, like Madame Lizzie Preston. Armed with champagne bottles, pokers, and high-heeled shoes, these Amazonian beauties formed a firm line of defense in front of their place. Madame Preston stood in the center of the line with a double-barrel shotgun pressed against her shoulder. It seemed that someone must have had a list of the addresses of the Chinese people because the crowd knew where to get them. And in the 8 hours of rioting from mid-afternoon to late evening, the mob moved over 40 to 50 blocks in the city's central district. After nightfall, the emboldened rioters were willing to commit even more monstrous act under the cover of darkness. Though there's no way to identify among the rioters and spectators, eyewitness accounts explicitly indicate that a majority of the participants were transients, laborers, and Democrats. They savagely broke the windows and knocked down the doors of every Chinese house or store they came across. If there were any people inside, the rioters immediately seized them, dragged them outside, and beat them with the intention of killing them. It's so scary to think about.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things strike me about this. Like, one, it's weird that this thing whole thing was ignited by these guys coming in and just fucking with these guys who are trying to have a good time playing pool, right? Like, they had a problem with that. It reminds me of, like, how many times, like, have I been out with, like, other Asians and there's a group of us and some white dude has to be like, I don't know, like, we're having too much fun. As Asians together, we're having too much fun. They're like, ni hao, what's up? Yeah. You know, like, and I'm like, just fucking mind your own business. Get, like, you know, like, interjecting
them.
It's
so weird. Yeah.
So there's that. But the real scary part, I think, is the fact that it boils over and becomes this thing where, like, they're literally going into businesses' homes and dragging people out. And it's just out in the open, right? Like, it's very out, explicit, kind of, like, very open racism, you know?
Well, they're not even, like, even involving people that have nothing to do with it, that are just working.
Right, right.
You know, that just going in to homes and also the reporting on this is sad, too, because it's unclear, like, who was doing what and... You know, nobody knows, like, who committed these crimes or... It's just... It's so crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the murder of Look Young. Despite concerted efforts by the overwhelmed policemen and diligent citizens to rescue the Chinese, Look Young lost his life that riotous day inside Sing Li Laundry. The attackers saw 3 Chinese, Chi Kong, Ah Sin, and Look Young, and immediately dragged them out. Somebody put ropes around their necks and cut off their queues, holding them high in the air as if the men had just been scalped. Seeing his old customer and friend, Hickey, Look Young fell to his knees and begged for protection. But the angry mob was determined to kill the remaining victim. Calling Hickey a damned half-Chinaman, the crowd threatened to hang him if he did not step aside. Look Young died because the thugs had ruptured the blood vessels in his brain through blunt force trauma. A native of Hokksan, about 80 miles from Canton, the murdered man had been in the United States for 4.5 years and in Denver for just 6 months. His wife and parents back in China all depended on his income to live. He was only 28 years old. It's just so horrible. So the aftermath is about 150 claims were found, totaling about $30,000 in damages, but no Chinese residents were paid for property or business losses. In 2019, Colorado state historian William Way pointed out that the history of the riot is too often told through the lens of white historians, especially with a plaque in downtown Denver. There's a plaque there where this happened. If you read the plaque carefully, you notice it does not dwell on the victims of this race riot, the Chinese. It focuses on the heroes who came to their rescue, Let me say that I applaud the heroes who came to their aid, but it does reflect a certain attitude that persists, the need to have a white savior. Well, the plaque honors the names of the white saloon keeper and the customers who help keep the mob at bay. It does not name Lee or the other victims. They're not apt to identify the victims because that would humanize the experience, which I think we should do. That's what Wei said. I mean, it's like...
It's if this were a movie, you know, it would star Matthew McConaughey as the guy, the saloon keeper who protects these, you know, and then...
All right. I mean, you know, they want to look back and sort of like say, well, we helped them. But I mean, I don't think there's a plaque in Los Angeles, you know, for the 1871 Chinatown massacre that happened. I don't think there's a plaque there, but it did happen near the site of where the Chinese History Museum is.
I know the area there. Yeah.
So it's not in Chinatown now. It's closer to Olivera Street.
Right.
But there's no real sort of place that they would memorialize that lynching. Uh-huh. But it's like, but this is just one of the stories. And this is one of the ones that I had no idea about. Like, I knew about Eureka and Antioch and Tacoma and, of course, Rock Springs and mm-hmm. Chinatown here. But this one was one that was like, I didn't know. But they almost, all these stories are pretty identical in the way that it just starts in a bar and it just starts with a fight and then the white mob is just like enraged and ready to go. This sort of vigilanteism, like that credo of they're taking our jobs.
Right. Also, I also was not familiar with this particular incident, but I was definitely aware of like, mm-hmm. you know, all the stuff that happened back then, all up and down the West Coast and Western United States, you know, that this was part of like a sort of an unofficial campaign to drive out the, you know, the Chinese. It's kind of, it illustrates what happens when like there is that rhetoric in the air, right? Like they're taking our jobs, we need to get rid of them, and then so it just takes that incident in the pool, you know, at the pool table to spill out, and then it just becomes this fucking nightmare, you know?
Right. It's but they're taking our jobs, they might take our women, that they're doing this, they're doing that, and we've got to stop it.
Yeah.
It is really this strange denial, even in history, to fully recognize the enormity of the horrific incident. Yeah. You're just highlighting the heroic acts of the white saviors that were there, which is like, if you're going to recognize a heroic act, I say the madam.
Yeah, right. I'll see that movie. I'll watch that movie.
I think I like the madam. I really want the madam to be played by Rhea Perlman. No, maybe who is Gwendolyn Christie? Did she play Americans?
They did describe them as Amazonian, so she'd be very tall and
Amazonian beauties. Yeah. Which is like kind of that's kind of an interesting detail. I think that's really, I don't know why. I feel like there was a like a lot of maybe connection with these brothels and the Chinese workers. I know that there was quite a few like Chinese run and operated brothels in Los Angeles at that time. Because and gambling houses, because there was just no ability for the Chinese to have sort of like quote unquote legitimate jobs. Because we were forced out of so many things. So for brothels and things like that, that was definitely part of the culture.
You know, to connect this with what's happening right now, I feel like the most obvious thing is that like all the stuff that's happening right now, all the violence, it's so brazen and it's so happening out in the open, you know, and it comes with this whole other backdrop of like of the coronavirus and of this anti-China rhetoric and calling it the China virus, all that stuff, that it primes it for these moments, the opportunities to come where violence erupts. You know what I mean? And if anything, I feel like America is undergoing this like year long nationwide anti-Asian riot. In a lot of ways, right? Like that we're you know, people have been given the green light to just fucking act up, and then like it's our elders and it's our most vulnerable who are getting beat up and getting killed, right?
I know, and it's but it is when America's in crisis, our Americanness comes into question, which is the continually happening, whether it's this in Denver, whether it's the Chinese Exclusion Act, whether it's Japanese internment, whether it's the auto industry and Vincent Chin.
Don't forget 9/11. After 9/11, South Asians.
Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you really believe somebody's a terrorist, why would you fuck with them? If you really believe somebody has a coronavirus, why would you scream at them?
Right.
They don't really believe any
of
this.
Right. It's just getting out this aggression that this, you know, that's already existing in you, you know. This is your excuse. This is your green light.
That's
right?
Already there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is, it's not, it's just a pattern. And it's something that we continue to deal with. And you've been doing for such a long time with Angry Asian Man. And
yeah. I mean, it's why I've been very, in a lot of ways, I've sort of like taken all, everything that's happened in the last year or so with like, well, I know this. I mean, we know this. We've been witnessing this happening a long time. Like, this is not new. But that's not to say, like, I don't want to say, like, well, I knew it and you know, this is spurring people who were previously sort of uninvolved into action. You know what I mean? And that includes Asian Americans. Like, you know, suddenly, like, this is their moment. So I don't begrudge anybody who's suddenly seeing things for what they are now, you know? Like, hey, welcome, you know? Let's do it. Yeah.
Let's do it together. Yeah. I'm a longtime fan of yours. You know how I feel.
The feeling is mutual.
You're the best. Where can people find you online and what you're doing out there?
Yeah. On social media, you can just find me at Angry Asian Man. And then my main website is angryasianman.com. You can find, I've got a podcast that I host with Jeff Yang called They Call Us Bruce. We call it an unfiltered conversation about what's going on in Asian America. And then we have a book coming out later this year.
Yes.
I wrote it with Jeff Yang and Philip Wang. It's called Rise, a pop history of Asian America from the 90s to now. You are in it, Margaret.
Yes.
So,
super cool.
Yeah. And we're pretty proud of it. So, check that out.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Today, we are highlighting the San Leandro Nonprofit Community Impact Lab. Founded by Suha Bowen, Community Impact Lab envisions a world where women and their abilities are valued, where work and life can be integrated, and where families act as a force for positive social change. They organized a Stop the Hate rally in response to the San Leandro attack. To get involved, go to communityimpactlab.org. which we will link to in our show notes. If you want to support our show, subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts, and spread the word. Reach out to me on Twitter with your thoughts, at Margaret Cho, or at Instagram, at Margaret_Cho. The Margaret Cho is produced by the Irios Network.
Irios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.